right, welcome back to another reporting of the podcast Digging. I'm Taylor Maurer, founder and senior managing partner here at Heavy Civil Resource Consultants. And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Lonnie Morlock, a renowned coach and consultant in the construction industry. With over 40 years of field experience, Lonnie has dedicated his career transforming project supervisors into high-performing leaders. Through his company, Morlock Motivational, he focuses on absolute teamwork and continuous improvement, guiding teams toward what he calls performance above and beyond. Lonnie's journey is remarkable. Not only did he navigate a successful career at Kiewit without a college degree, but he also chose to pivot toward coaching and consulting to share his expertise and passion for leadership development. We'll explore his insights, the challenges he's faced, and the inevitable lessons that he's learned along the way. Plus, we'll dive into his latest book, What Makes Your Team Tick, and uncover the secrets to building successful, cohesive teams. So sit back and be prepared to be inspired by Lonnie Morlock's journey in leadership and teamwork. Lonnie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and joining me today. You are in the greater Sacramento area, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Rockland, California, about 40 miles east of Sacramento towards the Sierras, Lake Tahoe.
Oh, wonderful. What a beautiful area. And I guess it's thawing out there and the roads are open and it's starting to get nice. So yeah, wonderful. Lonnie, I'd like to just dive into how did you get into construction? Or was construction a family thing? And you grew up with your dad and doing construction with or maybe another family member? Or is this something that came to you some other way?
No, you hit the nail on the head first round there, Taylor. I grew up in a construction family, third generation. My grandfather worked for a world contractor all over the world. I helped build the Panama Canal. Did a bunch of work up in Alaska, big Air Force bases back in the day. And my dad, he went into construction as well. Him and my uncle both. And basically, my better part of my life was Northern California. And my dad worked for a company, Gordon Ball, and they built big freeways. And we basically traveled from one freeway job to the next. And, I fell in love with construction at an early age. I write about it in my book. I think my dad took me for a ride on my first scraper ride when I was very young. And man, I was hooked. We were on a job in Yreka, California. My dad was building I-5 segment there from Yreka up through the Siskiyous to the Oregon border. And all the other kids in the summer were going to the local pool. I was down under the Shasta River Bridge watching the scrapers run all day. It just mesmerized me. And I always wanted to be a builder. And so that was kind of my start. My senior year in high school, I managed to get a job on a dam project in Cloverdale, California, as a soil tech out on the dam site on night shift. And I loved it. And I did that for my whole senior year. And a guy had come around all the time asking me how the tests were and, dressed really nice in a brand new Jeep Cherokee. I knew he was somebody, but I wasn't sure who he was. And anyway, about 3 months before I was going to graduate, he stopped and asked me, you work all night and go to school all day. And I said, yeah. And he said, that's pretty impressive. What do you want to do when you get out of school? And there were 637, 657 scrapers building the right abutment of the dam. Like a 500-foot beaver slide. And I pointed up to it and said, I want to run one of those. And said, well, come and see me when you graduate from high school. So I graduated on a Friday, and Monday morning I was sitting in his office waiting for him. And by golly, he got me in the operating engineers, and that's where I started.
That's amazing. So you went directly into the union right after high school.
Absolutely. Yep. Operating engineers, Local 3.
And that's really neat that while most of us were playing with Tonka toys, you were actually there with the big equipment.
Yeah, no, it was, that first job was very amazing. I, all the older hands would always tell me, you're not going to see very many jobs like this, young man. And I thought all the jobs were going to be that big and amazing, but it was a pretty cool place to start.
Do you remember who the contractor was building that dam?
Yeah, it was Auburn Constructors. It was a,
yeah,
I think a consortium of Dillingham, Atkinson, and Arundel, if I remember the names right, you know, back in the day. And yeah, it was a very large, it was a large earth fill dam project, now Lake Sonoma in Hillsburg,
oh,
California.
wow. Yeah. Okay. And you said you were working night shift and going and finishing your senior year. How did you, like, you had to be the only person that you knew that worked a night shift and was going and finishing high school. Did you have
I didn't share that with very many. So I kind of kept out on the down low.
That is truly amazing. I mean, that almost leaves no time for sleep. I mean, hopefully you didn't have a whole lot of homework that you had to
go. No, you know, school was pretty easy. So, you know, it was another path I wanted to travel, but life sent me down the road I went. So
here you are in the Operating Engineers Union, and is that how you discovered Kiewit, or how did things progress in your career from that point forward?
Well, I worked for many different contractors all throughout Northern California. You know, I, in the union, you have to have 10 years in before you can go and look for your own work. So, you know, every year it was whatever contractor I could work for, and hopefully they kept me busy. And then I started, you know, looking for the overtime, you know, because that's where the money was at. And I was actually working for a company by the name of Tykert Construction on a big job in Stockton, California. I had about, I don't know, almost 20 years in the 15 years in the union then, I guess. And I was learning how to grade set. I'd run a bunch of different equipment over the years and wanted to learn how to be a grade setter. I always had a desire to, you know, become a foreman possibly someday. And a buddy of mine called me and said, hey, the job was winding down. And he said, hey, I'm on this job in Brisbane, California, for this outfit named Kiewit. And they're working 5 days a week, 12 hours a day. They got to have the weekends off because the neighbors don't like listening to the construction equipment. And that didn't take long to register in my mind. 6/12s on the weekend off, or 5/12s, excuse me. So, yeah, I gave my notice and went to work for Kiewit. And my very first day, I'll never forget it. It was my very first day on the job. It was like I knew I was in the major leagues. It's like, man, this is my dad and grandfather always called it BTC, big time construction. And boy, that was it. And I figured, man, I found my home. So I worked my heart out and came to work 3 months later. The foreman told me I had to go talk to the project manager. And I'm like, God damn, you know, the job's winding down. They're going to lay me off. And what a drag. So I went and talked to the project manager. And he said, well, Lonnie, we don't have no more work for you here. Things are slowing down a bit. And I said, well, that's okay. You know, hey, it was a great run. You guys are a great company. If you ever have any work in the area again, give me a call. And he goes, well, now, wait a minute. I didn't say we didn't have any work here. We want to start you as a grading foreman on a freeway project right up the road, Willow Pass Highway 4. I said, I don't know. I don't think I'm ready to be a foreman yet. I don't know anything about leading anybody. He looks right at me and says, well, you got two choices. You can go be a foreman starting Monday, or you're done here today. What do you want to do? So pretty easy choice. So I guess I better go learn how to be a foreman.
So you were forced into leadership.
Yeah. I guess you could put it that way. I didn't ask for it. That's for damn sure.
Interesting. And so you move into a foreman role. Did you feel like you had the skills that you needed, the training you needed, and the personality and the skills to be a leader at that point? Is this?
Oh, absolutely not. I grew up in a home with supervisors, and I'm like, man, I know I'm not ready for this. And the first step I did was Saturday morning, I went to the local Barnes & Noble store in Sacramento and thought, man, I got to find a book on leadership quick. And I picked out the very first book that jumped out at me. I'll never forget it. 31 years ago. And it was What It Takes to Be Number One, Vince Lombardi. And I thought, oh man, I love the NFL. Not much of a Green Bay Packer fan, but I've heard of Vince Lombardi. So I'm going to give it a go. And man, I tell you what, I've kept that book in my hand for the next 31 years.
That's amazing. So that is so besides your book, that's a book of leadership that you would recommend. And I guess that book can, you know, that speaks to really any industry, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a great leadership book. I've had many, many that I purchased over the years, but that was always one of my favorites. And anyway, so I thought I was ready to go. And, you know, thank God I had some really good mentors right out the gate that took me under their wing and taught me how to lead a team. And didn't take me very long to figure out that the biggest part of being a foreman on a project is being organized and coordinated and have a good plan. And of course, I started out running around screaming and yelling because I thought that's how you were supposed to be when you were a foreman. And again, thankfully, I had some damn good mentors that found me that's not the right way. It took me the first day to get nicknamed the Tasmanian Devil, and write about that a little bit in my book. But thankfully, I got over that quickly. But yeah, it was quite the experience. But I had some great mentors, and that's what really you know, helped me to be successful and move on in my foreman career.
I think this is a good opportunity for us to move towards talking about mentorships. And that is something I'm very passionate about. We've got multiple articles, videos about mentorship, protege, and how important it is, and how to go about setting that up, whether you're a mentor or whether you're a mentee. So I'd like to hear about your experience early on with seeking out a mentor. How did you do it? What did you find successful? And if you were going to take the knowledge that you had now and apply that to your youth when you were younger and starting to seek out these mentors, what would you have done differently or the same?
Well, I tell you, I think I would have not done anything differently. I always seeked out the, you know, I know the older operators, I guess, as if that's safe to say, the ones that I knew that had extensive experience and were willing to teach. You know, there were, as you well know, there's many that aren't willing to train, but thankfully there are those. And I've been a believer since day one that being a mentor is not only is it a blessing, but it's a privilege. But in any business, I think it is. It's almost like it should be a requirement of sharing your knowledge and helping the people under you to learn how you learn and teach them the things you know so they can carry on. And then someday, you know, they're going to be a mentor. And I preach that all the time now in my business and in my leadership development training is the importance of leaders to be mentors and take the time to train and teach, because that's how all of us got to where we're at. I mean, none of us were born with knowledge. And, you know, those that are willing to train and teach are generally the ones that, you know, someone took the time to train and teach them. And I was blessed 100 times over with some of the greatest mentors, I believe, in the construction field. And man, I sucked it in like a dry sponge in the desert on a rainy day. You know, I take in all the knowledge you can. One of my greatest mentors, Herman Hall, the old time grade setter, back in my Tykert days, and he used to always, you know, he's had a bit of a Southern slang, and he used to always say, "Lonnie, don't take that knowledge you got to the grave with you. Share it with everybody you got, because it don't do anybody any good when you're dead."
Yeah, and that's
the damn truth. You know, it's an honor to be a mentor, but I think it's almost something that everybody should be willing to do, is be a teacher, be a mentor.
I know as part of what we recommend in setting up mentorships is that you make it somewhat formalized. You have the protege, the mentoree, make a formal ask, you know, like, "I would like you to be my mentor," and then schedule meetings to come in and sit down with that person and talk about, you know, challenges, where you feel like you could use improvement. If that mentor is able to see this person in action, the mentoree in action, offer, you know, advice or feedback on that. What do you recommend in regards to a successful mentor-protege relationship?
Well, everything you said there is absolutely right. In the field, under live job site conditions, it's one-on-one. It's being that mentor that'll spend one-on-one time with an individual, no matter what discipline, they're involved with and what your experience is. You've got the mass grading experts and structure experts and, carpenters and all the different disciplines in the trade, underground, wet utilities, on and on and on. And, it's building that one-on-one relationship and then, working with that person on a daily basis, day in and day out, all the opportunity that you get, spending that one-on-one time. And I think that's what, that's what means true mentorship. And sure, if you're in a project office situation where you could sit down with the person once a week and go over what they're learning, what you're teaching them, sort of from a staff management level is where that works more often. Sit down and go over, what'd you learn this week? What would you like to focus on next week? These are the things I want to teach you. These are the things you need to learn to advance to that next level that you're trying to get to. And that's basically what, happened with me all through my career is every step, there was always somebody there to, take you by the hand and put their arm around you and say, hey, let's talk about this. This is how you want to approach this. And this is what you want to focus on in these situations. And this is what you're looking for. And just improvement, every way you possibly can. And which brings me to, my favorite phrase of being a member is, or a mentor, excuse me, is continuous improvement. How do you continuously help the person that you're mentoring to improve on a daily basis over a specific period of time that you have the opportunity to actually mentor them and take them under your wing and teach them what you know?
Sure. And so your foreman at Kiewit, but your career went much further than that at Kiewit. I believe you were ultimately a project manager. Can you give us a synopsis of moving from a union employee to a project manager in an organization like Kiewit? What did that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I think it's one of the biggest, most difficult steps for an individual to take in this business. And again, probably in any business, any industry, you go from a craft worker and an operations based worker, and you're given the opportunity to step into a manager position. And my most difficult transition was from being a craft foreman to becoming a field superintendent. You just want to continue to be that foreman out there, running the work and managing all the people on the project, where you got to step back and learn the scheduling and the planning and, all the management side of the business. And it was quite the struggle for me. And again, thankfully I had great mentors under me, but you got to just stick with it. When you know you've got the ability and you got the desire in your heart and the passion, that's a big driver, you just stick with it and you learn as you go. And, I got the opportunity to become a salary superintendent in 2000 for Kiewit, and it was a scary move. I had quite a few years in the union, but I was just never wanted to be 86 in a rocking chair on my porch going, damn, I wish I'd have given that a try. And so I did. And 20 years later, I was managing mega projects. And again, it was just one step at a time and learning all you can every step of the way.
So you felt like making the transition from a foreman to a superintendent was a more difficult transition than making a transition from a superintendent to a project manager.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause once you've become a superintendent level, and I've worked for many different companies, and, obviously I finished the majority of my career with Kiewit, but they're all based the same. You learn the basics of managing as a superintendent and you become, I wouldn't say an expert at it, because you're always learning, you're always improving, but you get very adept at scheduling and planning and operation analysis, obviously cost control, the whole nine yards. And that's what helps you then to make that next step into a more senior management role, because you've got that, you got that foundation under you, and you build that foundation and you grow upon that foundation. And then once you take the step into actual project management, you just continue to build from there.
Interesting. So you worked for Kiewit for how long? How many years?
27 years.
27 years with Kiewit. You're a project manager. I would imagine you're probably at that point part of the ownership, stock ownership program with the organization too.
Absolutely. Yes.
So tell me about making this leap from being a working for a top ENR contractor, one of the most reputable contractors in the country, when it, especially when it comes to large, heavy civil projects, and making the leap to give that up to do coaching and leadership training. Like what?
Well, you know,
was there a day that you woke up and you put on your shoes, you tied them, and you said, "Today I'm gonna do something different"? Or what factors pushed you that direction? And that had to be a huge leap of faith in regards to making that decision.
Definitely, took a bit of a leap of faith. You know, I loved being a builder. I mean, being a builder is one of the most gratifying careers I think a person can have. You know, you start a project from nothing, and when it's all over with, you step back and look at it, and man, you know, I had a part in building that. I had a part in building this dam. I had a part in building this huge future housing development. I had a part in building this new freeway or light rail train system or whatever. But when I started, clear back in my foreman time, when I started developing people under me, helping people under me to not just be supervisors, but how to be a leader, how to lead their team, that started to become a passion of mine that I just couldn't get enough of. And when I got into senior management and started developing people under me and watching them grow in their careers, watching them succeed, having a hand in their success. Of course, they did all the work, but you know, you still developing people is priceless. There's no price tag you can put on it, and it became my passion, and I loved it. And I decided that I'd kind of put together my own system of training field leaders. You know, we all have our own gifts and talents, and I guess that was one of my God-given talents, and I just able to help people see talent and ability within them that they couldn't see themselves, and helping to teach them how to pull that talent and ability out of them so they can excel and succeed further in their career, and then watching them actually do it, and for me that became my passion, and I knew that that was the path that I needed to transverse to. And so, yeah, it was a big leap of faith, but I'll tell you what, I wouldn't do anything different. I've been doing this for about 8 years now, and just had the privilege of working with many, many different supervisors and helping them to develop. And like I said, there's no price tag you can put on being a mentor and helping somebody to develop in their career and watch them grow and blossom and prosper. There's not enough words in the Webster's Dictionary to describe it.
So was this your thoughts on leadership and building, mentoring? Were these things that you started documenting along the way while you were still working with Kiewit, that you were like, you know, I think that we should do, you know, that this is a critical part of leadership, and this is like, when did you start really documenting all of this stuff that where you could actually say, okay, well, not necessarily the book per se, but just to go out and start talking to people about leadership and how to be great leaders and great mentors. Did you start documenting that kind of early on in your career, mid-career, or even just kind of late career?
No, I don't really per se that I, you know, documented anything. I think it was just my overall approach, personal approach, personal technique of getting inside an individual's head and helping them to understand what I had learned about becoming a leader and what it meant to be a field leader, not just a supervisor. And, you know, it was just when I started the company, I actually, you know, spent the first year figuring out, well, how did I learn to do what I do and what helped me to be successful? And many, many peers and colleagues that I had worked with over the years, you know, and, you know, what was the difference maker? And it all came back to just style and approach and just how to help somebody, like I said before, find those talents inside them that they never knew they had before. And it's just, you know, every individual is different. If you've got a project with, 75 supervisors, you've got 75 personalities, and how to connect with every single one of those different personalities in a leadership training aspect. And it everybody's different. So you have to approach everybody differently. But overall, it was just, you know, how did I get to be a successful leader? What helped me become successful? Now, how do I share that with the people I work with today to help them become successful?
So speaking of your coaching methodologies, you emphasize absolute teamwork and performance above and beyond in your coaching. Can you elaborate some on these concepts?
Yeah, sure. It's so I learned early on, you know, even as a foreman, and it just continued to learn more and more as I was given more opportunity, you know, to manage larger projects, larger staffs and what have you, as a project team that just goes out and performs the work every day is going to be successful. You know, you're focusing on all the things you got to focus on, you know, safety first, of course, always, you know, the quality of work that you're doing, productivity, all that good stuff. But when you could get that same group of individuals to get a burning passion inside to continuously improve in every one of their levels of commitment, you know, commitment to a team, that's actually a famous Vince Lombardi quote: individual commitment to a group effort is what makes a team. And helping all these individuals to understand that every one of them plays an integral role. I don't care who you are. Every one of them plays an integral role in the overall success of the team. But strive to be the best you can possibly be in your given role at that given time. And everything else will follow. Jack Welch writes about it in his book, Winning. You know, don't always be worried about my next promotion. Do the best you can do in whatever role you're in, and everything else will take care of itself. And so to get that group of individuals together, all focused, mind focused in the same direction to be the best we can be. And that's where you get performance above and beyond. And then when everybody comes together, everybody's clicking. I call it striving for the Rolex watch. I've been a history fanatic all my life, and I probably always will be. One of the things that got me through high school, I loved history. But when Hans Wildorf invented the Rolex watch back in the early 1900s, his goal wasn't to make a watch that was flashy and, you know, everybody would look at it and go, oh, man, they got money. You know, they got a Rolex watch. His goal was to make the best synchronized, chronicle, organized watch you could make that keeps perfect time all the time. And that's what he did. And so you take those 220 moving parts inside that Rolex watch and they all click together perfectly in perfect synchronization. That's what makes the Rolex watch. So that was my attitude was, hey, team, we're going to strive to be the Rolex watch. We're going to be perfectly coordinated and organized as perfect as we possibly can, because nothing's perfect, but we want to get as close as we can. and we're going to do things that nobody else can do. And we did it time and time again.
Amazing. And let's dig in to your book, What Makes Your Team Tick. So when did you decide that you were ready to write a book? I mean, you're definitely documenting these things, right?
Absolutely.
And so imagine you'd started documenting these things after you became a leadership coach, and what pushed you to say, I'm ready to make this commitment? You'd never written a book before, right?
No, I never had. I wrote a lot of material. I gave a lot of speeches and presentations. So I'd gotten pretty fairly good at that. But actually, to be honest with you, it goes clear back to that Saturday when I walked in Barnes & Nobles and bought What It Takes to Be Number One. I remember standing there looking at the rack, all the business management books, saying to myself, someday I'm going to have a book sitting on this rack. And about a year and a half ago, I decided I had a lot of goading, I guess you could say, from my past clients and past colleagues and people that knew me. Lonnie, you got to write a book about, what you do and how you got to where you were at. And so I actually found a publisher on LinkedIn and reached out to her, and I want to write my own book. And she said, well, have you written anything yet? And I said, well, I got an outline. I got the introduction, and I think I got the first chapter started. And she said, well, send me what you got and I'll take a look at it and I'll get back to you. So I emailed her everything, and I thought, yeah, well, I probably never hear from her again. And I can tell you, it wasn't an hour later and the phone rings and it's the publisher. And she says, have you ever written before? And I said, well, no, not until now. And she goes, well, you got to start writing because this is really good. And if this book continues the way it's reading right now, it's going to be very successful. I said, well, that's all I needed. So off I went. And it was a blast. I had a great time. It was probably one of the thrills of my lifetime writing that book. And book number two is coming right behind it.
Great. That's fantastic. You're already in the works for your
absolutely.
Second book.
Yeah,
and have
absolutely.
You got a working title?
I do.
What is it? Please share. Yeah. Are we the first? Are we the first?
You might be
know?
The first. It's it'll be Continuous Improvement, The Never-Ending Quest to Get Better Every Single Day. It's kind of the offshoot of, what makes your team tick? How do you get your team to perform? How do you get the people under you to want to be the best they can be and perform above and beyond and form that absolute team, is what I called it, because an absolute is, you're to the point where you're hopefully the best you can be, but you're always continuing to improve. And the thing I learned through my whole career and with, again, back to all the mentors I had and the teams I was blessed to be able to manage is never being satisfied with how good you did the day before, because that doesn't matter. What matters is how good are you going to do tomorrow? What do you got to do to continuously improve to get to the point where, you're trying to shave milliseconds roughly, off of a scraper spread or whatever you're managing, and so that's kind of how it transitions into continuous improvement. It's now you've got where you're at, but now how do you continuously improve? And people have asked me before, well, what do you mean by that? And it's like, well, the Wright brothers didn't stop at Kitty Hawk. I mean, we're flying Boeing 787s now and stealth bombers, and Henry Ford sure. didn't stop at the Model T. I like the Dodge Charger Hellcat. I'd like to see Henry Ford sit in that, even though it's a Mopar, which is my vehicle of choice.
right.
But yeah, that's kind of where it went. So,
and two, now that I know the story, the backstory of the Rolex watch, you built that story into the title of the first book, didn't you?
Absolutely.
The tick.
Yes.
It's the tick of
that's
the
right,
of,
yeah.
of the watch.
Yeah.
Who would you say this book is for? I mean, is it for any construction professional? Is it for construction professionals that ended found themselves where you were, standing in front of that Barnes & Noble bookshelf looking for a leadership book? Is it for owners who want their team to improve their management team? Like, who is the book for?
You know, I would say it's global. I really think as I wrote the book more and I read it back to myself and, you know, went through the with the editing with my publisher. I mean, we both came to the same conclusion that the book is really for any team, any type of team in any type of industry. It's construction based because that's what I know, and that's what my experience comes from is learning how to build teams on the construction side, but you know, teamwork and leadership is really in any aspect of any industry or business that we have. And I think it's a good read in of course, in my biased opinion, you know, for anybody that's really looking to, you know, how do we get our team to the next level? How do I get the people under me to, you know, to want to strive to be the best they can be? And, you know, it could be manufacturing, it could be sports teams, it could be, you know, construction, of course, construction based, because that's my background. But really, it's across the board. It's you know, how do you get your team to be all that you know they can be? You have to help them get there. How do I do that? And that's kind of where the book centers on. It's a common sense, you know, heart based leadership approach. And you know, I think that's one of the things that we suffer with a lot in our industry from a leadership standpoint is, you know, leaders are afraid to show their heart. They're afraid to show their passion. They're afraid to show, you know, that they really care about the people that are under them. And if you look at the successful leaders, those are the ones that are successful.
To have shown that they care, they put their heart out there on the line.
Absolutely.
How do you measure the success of your coaching interventions with project supervisors and teams?
Oh boy, many ways. Watching them grow in their ability to, you know, help their teams to perform at the level they want to perform. Watching them overcome, you know, maybe a problem or an issue or things that they've struggled with that they never really had the right tools in their toolbox to overcome and see them actually overcome and then be all that they could be and then continue to grow. You know, that is the common denominator for, you know, developing a leader is giving them the tools that they need as an individual to grow in the areas that they need to grow and then watching them take those tools and actually grow and become better. And become a better leader and a better mentor or coach for their own people, and then watching a team improve. You know, they were at this level when you started with them, and when you finished, they did the work. You know, I tell everybody that I work with, it's a process, and if you follow that process, 9 chances out of 10 you're going to be successful. But you got to put in the work. You don't wave a magic wand and become a better leader, you know, a better teacher, better coach, whatever. It's a lot of work, but if you put in the work, you're going to be successful.
Can you share some memorable success stories of those that you've coached and kind of highlight the impact of your approach?
Oh boy. That's a good one. Let me see. Well, you know, there's quite a few. And again, I want to focus on, it's not about me. It was about them figuring out what their stumbling blocks were and being able to overcome those, helping me being able to help them overcome those stumbling blocks and look at doing things possibly in a different way that they looked at before. You know, I'm a quote guy and I love good quotes. Tony Robbins, one of my favorite Tony Robbins quotes is, if we always do what we've always done, we're always going to get what we always got. And in order to improve, you got to quit doing what you've always done. And you got to step out into that scary space and do stuff you've never done before. And I think some of my highlights, I coached a gentleman, senior level manager, very introverted, very quiet, and, you know, got the opportunity to take on a pretty big team. Had never led a team before. And, you know, he really believed that he just didn't have it in him. And, you know, after I spent an observation day with all my clients, I spent a full day with them, just kind of, you know, taking everything in, you know, watch them, you know, in their role throughout the day. And I remember telling him, you've got talent and ability in you that you don't even know is there. And it was quite the process, but I'll tell you what, you see him now and you would never believe that he was introverted and not able to lead a team. And, you know, he just had to find those tools in his toolbox. A young foreman had never led a team before, had a group of very, very, very experienced operators and laborers working under him. And, you know, but he had never actually led a team. And so learning how to help that team to be organized and coordinated, you know, learning how to, you know, set that team up to succeed every single day and, you know, treat his people good. You know, recognition's a beautiful thing. You know, that's something we also seem to not have a whole lot of in this, definitely the construction industry. You know, someone's afraid to tell someone they've done a great job. And
I hear it all the time.
I never did understand that. It's like, what is that mindset? Everybody likes a pat on the back. You know, it makes you feel good. And then it builds your confidence. And that's another thing to becoming a leader. So I hope this young man build his confidence in himself, because his ability was always there. And, you know, you ask yourself, how do I know that I succeeded at the program? Well, you know, 3 years later, he's a general superintendent. So, you know, he didn't know how to come out of his shell, you know, and then utilize the talent around him to help him improve and get better. That's the other thing. You know, I preach about it all the time. Utilize all the talent around you, every bit of it, to help you become the best you can be. And that's what a lot of mentors taught me. And thankfully I listened, but yeah, those were several examples.
Yeah. I feel like construction drives individuals to do that, right? The whole premise of the hard bid mentality is to do more with less.
Absolutely.
So how do you motivate and utilize your team to do that? So yeah. And, you know, we were talking about people not getting enough recognition. I talk to candidates definitely weekly, if not daily, who are, you say, you know, all I want is to somebody to come by and tell me I'm doing a good job every once in a while. I don't need a raise. I don't need a big bonus. Just come by and tell me that I'm doing a good job. And so leadership really affects. Having good leaders really affects the overall culture of a company.
Correct.
And especially, again, kind of going back to the hard bid, where 50 plus hour work weeks are fairly normal in the industry.
Right.
You know, pretty high stress, always chasing the profit, you know, when you haven't left a lot of profit on the bid because you had to win it. So then always worried about, well, how do we make profit on this? It creates a pretty high stress environment. So what do you recommend to individuals that find themselves maybe with their head down in the work the entire time and maybe not able to see, they're not seeing the bigger picture of how to create a great culture through leadership. Do you see that often? I mean, what are the biggest challenges that you see out there? But that seems to be the one that I see out there quite frequently.
Well, I think to build a culture of leadership, you know, it starts with the senior managers being leaders, the field managers being leaders, and helping people underneath them to become leaders. And it's a never ending process. And I think the problem that I see a lot of nowadays is, again, just back to simple recognition, you know, not acknowledging at the end of the day, you know, that somebody worked their heart out. Yes, they're getting paid their wage. Yes, they're getting paid to do their job, but they're also giving their heart to doing their job. And they're trying to do the best they can do. And it doesn't cost any money at all to tell someone at the end of the day, hey, you worked your ass off today, man. Thank you very much. I really appreciate all your effort. And then people know that you care. And that's that's the starting point, I firmly believe, of good leadership is people know you truly give a damn about what they're giving to the team and the effort that they're making. And there's so many times when I don't know what it is or why, I haven't quite been able to put my finger on it, but you know, there's time in the day to let someone know that they've done a good job. And again, you're right. It doesn't have to be a raise. It doesn't have to be a barbecue once every 3 months. It doesn't have to be a pizza lunch or a award every 6 months. It's just a pat on the back or a handshake or, you know, hey, come into my office. I want to tell you what I think about how good you did today. And it's funny because I've actually I was on a project years ago I got sent to, and after being on that job for a week, I came to the conclusion that nobody in the field had ever been told they were doing a good job. And I'm like, how does this happen? And when I would tell someone they were doing a good job, they would look at me like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, well, you're doing a damn good job. I'm going to tell you. And I think that's a huge starting point for success in a team and success as a leader is being able to recognize your people in a caring manner that you care about what they're doing.
Recognize them, maybe even going so far as to thank them, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What are the other biggest challenges that you see in construction right now as an industry?
Well, I think hands down, the biggest challenge in the construction industry right now is you have a group of individuals, senior aged. You know, I know we got to be, you know, politically correct nowadays, but hey, if you're getting older, you're getting older. And they're taking all that talent with them and they're retiring. And they're not, they haven't taken the time to share that talent before they retire. So you have a huge talent pool that is now, you know, gotten through their careers and they're moving off to retirement or whatever comes next. And you got a young group coming up that wasn't able to tap into their skills and talents because they didn't share it. And there's a real glut in the industry of experience. And that's going to be a painful one to overcome.
Do you feel like this knowledge, this experience has not been shared by the older generations just because of generational gaps and how
absolutely
younger generations are different? And I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, right? So I kind of feel like I'm in the middle. I don't quite understand people younger than me, and I can relate more to people older than me, I think, than people younger than me, typically in a very generalized statement. But do you feel like that's why the knowledge hasn't been shared, or what is it, industry specific? Do you feel like to construction, or do you feel like this is across all industries pretty equal?
Well, I'll tell you, from all that I hear and listen to and see, I think it's across all industries. It's almost like there's a void there of being able to communicate now with the younger generation. And you just have to adapt to them. You know, we're all different. I mean, I remember when I was real young in the 60s and that whole movement, and they were different, and you know, the 70s was different and the 80s was different, and you know, every single generation is different, but you just have to adapt to each generation. And yeah, some of the younger generation, you know, they lack that respect level of the people above them who have the experience and the knowledge, and they want to learn it all right now. You know, they want to know everything yesterday. You know, we live in a adage I'm looking for? You know, you're on your cell phone, you're clicking, you get instant information. You hit Google, you can find out anything you want in 10 seconds. I think what the struggle is the younger generation needs to understand that I think no matter what the industry is, and because I come from construction, especially construction, is it takes years of experience. I mean, you've got to do your dues. You got to pay your time to learn. It's not something you learn overnight. And the younger generation that can take that time and invest in themselves over a 10 year period, 15 year period to get the experience they need are going to excel up to those, you know, higher paying positions, leadership positions, management positions, or higher skill level of operator, laborer, carpenter. I don't care what your craft trade is. The more you know, the more you make, and it doesn't happen overnight. So I think it really is something that needs to be dealt with from every level, from the senior level all the way down to the younger level of how do we share the knowledge that people need to succeed in this business, no matter where they're at.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So where can people find your book?
Amazon. Right now, paperback's available on Amazon. Ebook just came out. Hardcover is about 4 weeks away. Final design of the dust flap. You learn all these cool things when you write a book. I never knew the cover of a hardcover book was called a dust flap. So see, continuous improvement. You learn every day.
Right.
And then I'm actually in the process of doing the audio book myself, which is going to be a blast.
Cool. Fun. Awesome. Yeah. And do you know when that might be coming out?
Probably over the next 6 to 8 weeks. It takes a little time. I'm blessed with some great clients. They keep me pretty busy. So I trying to find time for the audio book, but I will get to it because I get a lot of requests for it. A lot of folks love those audio books. You know, you drive it down the freeway. Now you can listen to the book. You don't have to read it.
What about Morlock Motivational? How can people find you, find out more about the services that you offer and how you can help their business?
Well, you can go to my website, Morlock Motivational Incorporated. It's got a full on website, actually got a link on it to purchase my book now. And thank everybody, whoever listens to this podcast that have already bought my book and read it, and keep those reviews coming. The more reviews, the better. And actually, it'll be available in Barnes and Nobles here probably in the next 8 weeks as well.
Well, that's fantastic. That's huge news that you're getting picked up by Barnes & Noble. That's
absolutely
great.
Yeah.
In closing, is there anything that you can think of that you would like to, any knowledge or anything that you'd like to kind of share with listeners before we wrap things up?
You know, Taylor, I think the main thing I've learned throughout my entire career is find out what is your passion. What are you passionate about in the construction industry? What do you love the most? Is it mass grading? Is it structures? Is it concrete, paving, building skyscrapers, you know, whatever. In any other industry, if it's, you want to, help build the next rocket that makes it to Mars. If you love airplanes, if you want to be a doctor, a musician, whatever. What is your passion? Find that passion and go after it with everything you got and never, ever give up and never quit learning. Develop that passion to its full potential and you will be successful. Follow your passion.
Great. Lonnie, thank you so much for coming on our podcast and sharing your knowledge with us. We'll have all the information you shared in regards to where people can find your book in our podcast notes, as well as links to your website, Morlock Motivational. And we look forward to your continued success. One other thing, like looking ahead, you've got the second book coming out. Are there any other aspirations that you have for Morlock Motivational and your coaching practice?
You know, I ask myself that all the time. I just, the business just continues to morph in different directions. I would love someday to, be doing very large seminars in front of large groups of people and sharing my passion with the whole group. So many of my clients ask me time and time again, man, I wish there wasn't only one Lonnie Morlock, but that God only made one of me. So you gotta deal with what it is. But if I could figure out how to, touch more people with my knowledge, I think that's my goal going forward, is how do I share all I can and help as many people as I can possibly help be the best they can be.
Right. Lonnie, thank you again. And yeah, we'll see you next time on Digging the Podcast.
Right on. Well, thank you very much, Taylor. It's been an honor and privilege to be on your podcast. I wish you the absolute best. Feel free to call me anytime.
All right. Thank you, Lonnie.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.